My name is Victor Kubik. Welcome to another episode of the Kubik Report. Today, I'm once again with Ken Murray, who hails from Claremont, Queensland, Australia. We're glad to do another Vic and Ken, or the Ken and Vic podcast, where we share dialogue about subjects of common interest. And with Ken, he is quite broad in the things that he's interested in and things that he is involved in, what he has his hands in, whether it be travel, whether it be philanthropic work, whether it be science, whether it be farming, health, or faith. I mean, I've only got just some of the topics that I could think of off the top of my head. So welcome again, Ken.
It's wonderful to be with you once again, Victor. I so enjoy your company. We're just like a couple of brothers, aren't we, when we get together.
Well, that's the way I feel. It's always great to find a partner or somebody who you can share thoughts with that are tracking on the same wavelength. And I feel like we've had a career in helping people that has gone along the same tracks of what we feel our mission ought to be or what we need to be doing to help people. One thing about Ken is that he's been a very generous person from the standpoint of not only his resources, but also his time and the way he's really given of himself. And we have really did appreciate that very much. But today we'll be talking about a topic that I didn't think was part of Ken's world. There are lots of things yet I don't know about Ken, but we'll be talking about beekeeping, and we'll be talking about bees. I know enough about to know that I don't know enough about it, but Ken is a certified beekeeper for the state of Queensland in Australia, and that's what we'll be talking about today. And it's interesting because bees are such a marvelous little piece of machinery that God created. And there's no way that this thing could have evolved or developed or had come to the point of creating the products that it has that have lasted thousands of years. They have discovered honey and tombs that are ancient and found that it still hasn't spoiled. It really is truly an amazing product, a tremendous insect. Ken will give us an overview of this. But Ken, get us started on the subject of beekeeping and why we should be interested in it.
Well, that's a good question, Victor, and it's one that I hadn't thought about too much until I became a beekeeper, and then I was drawn into it, and I just became more and more fascinated by these little creatures who seem so ungainly in their appearance, and yet when you understand about them, they are designed just perfectly by our Creator to do the things that they do. And you know, Victor, some people, they have pets like a dog or a cat, like you probably do, or they have a bird. Well, in my case, I'm blessed with 1.2 million or more little pets, mm-hmm. which are my much cherished bees. And so I really love the little creatures. And it's amazing every time I put my head into a beehive to see how they operate and how they operate as a community. And more than a community, they operate as a giant family. And in each beehive, there's something like about 60,000 bees. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine having 60,000 bees in your family, Victor?
Well, what's amazing is that there's so many of them, and they only live like 20 to 60 days. And you could probably tell us a little bit more about that. But they visit thousands of flowers. Let's say busy as a bee, that's for sure. And they may only create one single bee, less than a teaspoonful of honey. It's just truly amazing. Yes. And yet they work together to produce this product that has been such a blessing for mankind.
They do. They all work in harmony. And I think that's something I also love from bees, because I learn so much from them and how really I wish the whole world would operate like a beehive, because we wouldn't have any place for wars and trouble and strife and pain and suffering. Because we'd all be taking care of each other, just mm-hmm. as bees do, like a family. And as you're quite right, in a beehive, there are many different roles. Of course, we often think of the queen bee, and we think that she's in charge of things. But in actual fact, she's not, would you mm-hmm. believe? But she is very sensitive to what she should lay, and she even has worker bees that work closely with her. And they tell her what kind of eggs to lay. Mm-hmm. They'll tell her whether to lay a worker bee egg, or if she's getting pretty old, they might tell her to lay an egg that's got pretty good genes in it so they can develop it into a queen. Or they'll tell it to lay an egg for a drone, which is a male bee. What I find is fascinating is that in most of nature, you need a fertilized egg in order for something to develop.
Mm-hmm.
And would you believe that a male is not fertilized by the queen? And so it's one of those extraordinary mysteries in creation. And but nevertheless, there are all these different roles of the bees, and the worker bee goes through different stages in their life. As you say, they only live for about 4 to 6 weeks. But in that time, they achieve so much. They start out as a nursing bee. They hatch out of their little cone and they start as a nursing bee.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, they even have to move around and help open up the cones of drone bees that are trying to come out of their cones.
Mm-hmm.
Because drones cannot break out of their cones to save themselves. They need a worker bee to break open the cone to help them out. And even when they come out, drone bees, male bees, can't even feed themselves. They need the worker bees to feed them. Now, it's a good idea to think about these things in terms of how could this possibly be in terms of evolution?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it takes a great creator that has created things this way, where even a drone cannot even break out of its cone. It can't even feed itself. It has no stinger to protect itself or to, engage an enemy. And all it does is really fly out of the hive for about half an hour in half an hour flights and hopes that it might come in contact with a unmated queen.
Mm.
And if it does mate with a queen, it mates with a queen and then drops off and dies. So we have some very unusual things that are happening. And of course, with the worker bee, as I started to mention, they hatch out of their little cone. They immediately become one that is looking after the other cones, and they are cleaning and mm-hmm. taking care of that, and then they become more of a worker. They begin to work in the architectural and building industry by using their wax from their body, which mm-hmm. exudes from the scales of their abdomen, and they build these incredible hexagonal cones, which are perfectly 120 degree angles,
mm-hmm.
and is known to be the strongest type structure you can have.
Right.
And those cones are set at about 9 degrees to the horizontal, just enough to keep the nectar that has been turned into honey in the special second stomach of mm-hmm. the bee.
Mm-hmm.
And when they put that nectar that's been developed into honey from their stomach, they put that into the cone. And of course, then there are other bees that are worker bees that are fanning that honey so as to reduce the moisture in it down to 20% level. And once that cone is full, then they put a very thin veneer of beeswax over it. It's just a beautiful thing to see. It's a work of art.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's so strong to hold that honey in there until the hive has need for using it, perhaps in times of drought or dearth or during the winter time, especially when the worker bees can even live a lot longer in the winter time because they're not doing as much, so they can live up to about, 6 or 8 months, I believe.
Oh, really?
Whereas mm-hmm. normally they only live for about 4 to 6 weeks because the worker bee moves on to go out of the hive and then it goes searching for honey.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, not honey, but it goes searching for nectar and for pollen and for minerals and for even resin out of trees, which they develop through the process of adding beeswax to it and then their enzymes, and they make propolis,
mm-hmm.
Of course, and these sort of things. And then from there, the worker bee, it can be a soldier bee, and eventually then it dies. So it goes through these different stages of life and purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And within the hive. Yeah.
Well, if you could maybe circle back a little bit to the drones, because not much was said about the drones. Maybe there isn't much more to say because they don't really have a very fulfilling life like the worker bees. But the lucky one gets to mate with the queen, and of course, most of them won't, if hardly any. And then they die. Do they collect any nectar? Do they do anything?
No, they don't. Their sole purpose in life is just it's the male dream, isn't it? Just to sit back, be fed by you. And because all the workers are ladies, they're all female bees. So the ladies feed them. They help them break out of their cones, as I mentioned. They feed them. they nurture them, they keep them comfortable with the temperature right for them in the hive. And then, of course, they fly out for about half an hour, half an hour stints, and they go out to the drone congregation area. So they fly out to a mutual area where the drones like to meet. And then when there's an unmated queen who's just hatched out, she takes about 16 days to develop in her beautifully formed. It's a work of art, the way the bees form these queen cones. And it's quite a work of art, these queen cones, the way they develop in an extended form. They're a different form to the usual other cells in the brood. And the queen, after 16 days, she'll fly out from the hive and she'll go to the drone congregation area, which could be around 30 feet to about 120 feet. She'll end up flying up in that area of that.
Well, Ken, what's the population area difference? Do you have just very few drones? Is it a sizable percentage of the whole population, or just what is the percentage?
It's around about 20% of the hive.
Okay.
Normally, because the hive, again, it has this unwritten kind of code of conduct in there, and that they want to preserve the genetic makeup of the hive, and but not for their hive. They're very concerned about other hives, because the queen doesn't mate with the drones in her own hive. Otherwise, there'd be inbreeding, and you'd have, you know, a deterioration in the genetic makeup of bees over a period of time, which again goes against the grain of evolution, doesn't it?
Right.
But they fly out, and the queen flies out deliberately to get away from her hive and to go to a drone congregation area where she mates with drones of another hive, so as to keep the gene pool in its best state. And of course, the drone that catches her will need to fly very high in the air. He's the one who's the most strong and powerful, because he's had to fly at least 120 feet high in the air to catch up with her and finally mate with her. And of course, in that effort, and in the mating, he then drops off and dies. So that's the end of him.
But then how many offspring will this one queen have from this one mate?
Well, that's the other amazing thing. I mean, she'll go out for a few days and she'll mate with a number of drones. And then she goes back to the hive and she never does another mating flight ever again. And she'll live for about 2 to 3 years. And she has a special sac in her body that stores the male sperm from the drone bees. And she's able to have enough sperm in that sac to fertilize eggs for 2 to 3 years. And in fact, it's known that she can fertilize up to 1,000 eggs, would you believe, in one day. So it's extraordinary, the microtechnology and the nanotechnology of that sperm is so minute, and the eggs are very tiny as well that she lays. But that's the kind of productivity a queen can have, and and that's how it comes about.
Well, I just wanted to get back to the drones before we drop that subject. I'd like to kind of continue on where we were with the worker bees. And now that we have all these worker bees, what next?
Well, they go through these different cycles, and there's so many mysteries about bees. You know, the it just reminds me that, you know, even in the scriptures, that it says in Romans chapter 1, verse 20, for since the creation of the world, the invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. You know, as humans, we're without excuse to know that there is a God, or not a God, because we see the evidence in nature, in the creation, all around us. You know, and bees are just one example. You know, there's 20,000 different types of bees that all have different sorts of functions.
So that
a honeybee, for example, can't pollinate a tomato flower because it's too small for it. It's not possible for it to do it. It doesn't work with the honeybee. So it takes a wild bee or a tiny bee of a different nature to be able to pollinate those types of flowers. And bees are responsible for pollinating, honeybees that is, are responsible for pollinating up to 30% of crops, grains, fruits, vegetables, flowers, all sorts, herbs and so on. Without bees, we'd all die. So they're very precious.
Well, you say 30% of all crops are pollinated. Now, what about the other 70%? Are there other ways that pollination takes place?
There are. We know that with grains, for example, the primary pollinator is the wind. The wind passing over barley and wheat and sorghum and various other grain crops. But bees also do some of that as well, mind you. But, you know, when you come to crops like almonds, for example, here in Australia, down in Victoria, they grow almond trees, and beekeepers travel from all over Australia with dozens and dozens and dozens of beehives on their trucks. And the almond industry depends on these bees and from these beekeepers to pollinate the almond flowers. Otherwise, we don't have almonds. So it's quite amazing. And so, in the scriptures there, I think it's in Psalm 14, verse 1, it says, "The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. You know, they're corrupt. They have all done abominable works. There's none who does good." And, you know, it's only a fool who says there is no God, really. When I look at bees, I just see the Creator over and over and over again. It's like a very complex watch, only even more so.
Well, you're absolutely right. What we see in God's working with inventing this, and sustaining it. One of the things about God is that He's not only the Creator, but He's the sustainer who keeps the whole thing going.
Absolutely.
And it's amazing what happens in the bee world and also in other insects like butterflies. It's just truly, truly astounding. And like you said, only a fool can say that there is no God. We can take joy, absolute joy, in looking at the beauty of creation and teach it to our children. We find that one of the best things that we can do to talk to our grandchildren about God and, you know, His presence is talking about these wonderful things that He has created and sustained. And so the more I read about bees, the more wonderful it's been. The first I had really studied bees and studied was going back, you know, a long time ago with the Moody Bible Institute and the Moody Science that produced the first videos about beekeeping. This is a long time ago. This is like 50 years ago, more than 50 years ago, where it was still very poor video and audio, but they were excellent lectures that we've actually looked at not too long ago about bees. And it's truly astounding what they do. And
absolutely.
And I just marveled when you said that you were involved in beekeeping. I thought, well, that's part of Ken's worship.
It is, because as I look into a beehive, I just really am thinking and talking almost with God in that sense of saying, this is marvelous. In fact, I often say, this is incredible. I just can't believe this, that they're doing this, you know, and this is so beautiful. Sometimes someone's with me, like my wife or whatever, and I'll pull out a frame of honey, you know, and the way the bees have constructed and made it. And I just look at that in wonderment. I think, that is magnificent. This little creature made that, you know, and that's just a work of art. It reminds me of, and I think, wasn't it Voltaire that said, it is difficult to free fools from the chains they revere. I think that's worth saying again. Voltaire once said, it's difficult to free fools from the chains that they revere. You know, you can convince someone against their will, but they're the same person still.
Right.
I think it was also Voltaire that said, common sense is not so common. And, you know, it's just common sense. Boy, oh boy. I mean, when you look into a beehive and you see how bees operate, and we've barely even skimmed the surface today of the incredible aspects of bees and what they do, you just wonder and you are amazed that, yes, there certainly is a creator, a great life giver, a great lawgiver, and a great sustainer, as you say, because it's one thing to create all these things, but then for it all to be sustained and to continue on, as bees do, their colonies go on, you know, those initial bees have all died, you know, but their heritage goes on. And it's something like that in the church, isn't it? You know, there are ones that have gone before us who've been the faithful ones, even the way back to Abel, and right up through Abraham and Sarah and all the wonderful men and women who've been faithful over the centuries. And it's like a beehive, you know, one passes on to the next generation, and so we develop on the genes, the spiritual genes, so to speak.
You know, I've been pollinated by the sacrifices and the works of people before, and hopefully that my life is also pollinating other interested people. But one thing I'd like you to talk about, Ken, there's functions of bees. One is pollination. It's absolutely vital. And we have the same thing, too. We have these pickup trucks going with beehives, you know, going into, especially right now where bees are dying out. In some areas, they're very endangered, where people have to hire them, like you said, for the almonds and others, where maybe years ago it was done more naturally and just as a matter of course, but now with pesticides and other chemical enemies of bees, it's become more difficult. But one aspect is the pollination aspect. But then there's the amazing product that they produce, which they don't have to, you know. They have the honey, of course, is for their own use. But honey is a big blessing for mankind, a sweetener spoken of in the Bible, you know, as something that is a delightful thing. Tell us about what you do. You know, you talk about all the beehives that you have. Do you raise honey commercially for sale? Tell us about your operation, Ken.
Well, I got into it because one of our people that work in our business was leaving, and her husband had beehives here in Clermont, and they were worried because what can they do with the bees? So I said, well, I'll take it over if you can teach me about them. And because I had somewhat of a background fascination with these little creatures anyway, and I just fell in love with them as Mark was teaching me about it and learning about it. And then I watched video after video and read, you know, lots of material about them and learnt, but the bees actually taught me, really, and that's how I got into it. But yes, we do produce honey commercially at our Gumby Gumby farm here in Australia. We grow Gumby Gumby trees, and also we produce Gumby Gumby honey, the Gumby Gumby farm honey. And not that they're just from the flowers of the Gumby Gumby trees, but they're also from eucalypt trees and other wonderful natural trees, and also fruit trees. And I think we're responsible with our bees for pollinating a good many of our citizens' fruit trees and vegetable crops and so forth in our little town of Clermont here. So that's how I got into it and fell in love with these little creatures. And as I've been explaining, how they really highlight the wonderful mind of God. That's really where my interest came from. And they do pollinate many types of crops and fruit trees and so on.
And it takes a skill to know how to really handle it, you know, how to build it, when to go in, and this sort of thing. Perhaps you could talk about the interface between the human the human caretakers of beehives and the blessing of the creation itself.
Well, the amazing thing with bees is they have senses that are so much more pronounced. For example, they have five eyes, and they can see for miles, and they can see extremely close up. And they have a sense of smell, which is 50 times more than a dog, for example. So they have great facilities and capacities beyond what we have. And so, yes, in our apiary, as it's called, our bees actually make their own queens. And we do that by having what's called a little nuc. It's a little smaller hive of about 6 frames. And in that, I put some frames of some honey and also some frames that have pollen in the cones and so on, because bees need not only the nectar, but they need pollen, and they need minerals, and they need propolis from the sap of trees and so forth, and they need water. which they all carry as well. So in that little nucleus, I have six frames. And so I take two frames out of the brood box of a beehive. That's the bottom box of a beehive. And I take two frames that have got a brood in it, that where there's only fresh eggs that have been laid by the queen. And then I take the bees that are working on those two frames, and I put those two frames with the bees into the center of my nucleus box, and it's a nucleus hive. So we call them nuke boxes. And then I take that at least 5 kilometers away from the hive that I've taken those two frames from, and because then I replace those two frames with two what we call sticky frames, or ones that have been spun, and the bees then work on those, clean them up, and they use them, and the queen lays fresh eggs into those two frames in the hive. So I take that nuke box at least 5 kilometers away from where the hive was. Otherwise, those little bees would fly back to their home hive. They're incredible in their navigation abilities. So there, after about, well, within 4 days, those bees have worked out that they don't have a queen. So then they begin to feed royal jelly from out the tops of their heads. Royal jelly comes from the tops of the queen's head. And they feed that royal jelly to certain eggs in there that they know have the best genetical makeup for making a queen. How they determine that is a great mystery. It's incredible. But they feed that royal jelly to those cells. Now, every bee gets fed royal jelly for the first 3 days of its little life as an egg growing into a larvae. But after 3 days, the most cells get fed bee bread, which is a combination of nectar and of pollen and minerals and so forth. So they get fed bee bread, but no, not with the queen. She gets fed royal jelly right from the start, and through the rest of her life, the worker bees around her feed her royal jelly. She gets it from the tops of their heads as it exudes from their foreheads. So that queen cell then develops in 16 days. And as I mentioned before, she then breaks out of that queen cell. She does it of her own accord. The worker bees don't, as they do with the drone cells. But she breaks out, and then she flies into a drone congregation area where she'll do that over several days, and she'll mate with a number of drones. Only the strongest can catch up with her, because she will fly somewhere between 30 feet to 120 feet high. She'll mate over those few days, and then she'll have enough sperm gathered in the sacs, or in the special sac, I should say, in her body to be able to fertilize eggs the rest of her life of 2 to 3 years in that cell. So then with that nuke hive, over a period of time, she's laid so many eggs and there's so many bees that it begins to become big enough that I can then take those frames and put them into a bigger brood box of 9 to 10 frames. And so then she continues to lay, and as the hive develops, I then put another box on top, and there's a screen I put between, the queen cannot go up into the box above, because that box is only for the bees to bring their nectar, and they cough it out from their special stomach into the cones in the second box, and that's where it's turned into honey, and that's the box that beekeepers gather the honey frames from. And then when we gather a frame of honey, we take it to our special little room where we have, in our case, we have a stainless steel spinner. And I then decap, it's called decapping, you decap the wax off the top of the frames, and then you put those frames, 4 frames, into the spinner in this case, and then it spins very fast, and the honey spins out and goes to the bottom of the stainless steel chamber and pours out of a tap, which we then will filter, of course, to make sure there's no little bees' eggs and wings and other things in it.
Now, do the bees know that the honey's being robbed and that they're is taken away from them? They become protective of it? They start making more? Or how does that work?
Yes, they make honey in excess, much more excess than what they need themselves, which is quite interesting that God has created them for this purpose, because God's had it in mind that humans will gain value from bees' honey. And I could go into another podcast in discussing that and all the different benefits from honey. But when we take the frames out of the hive, we replace those frames we've taken out of the honey box section with fresh frames, and they're frames we call stickies. And they're called stickies because we have spun the honey out of them, and then we put them in a freezer to sterilize them, and then we thaw them out, and then we put them back into a hive where we're taking frames of full honey, and then we're putting these emptied sticky frames in. So the bees then are able to clean those up. They get the value of the honey that's still stuck on those stickies. They clean up the cones and they put fresh honey in them, and so the cycle continues. So they're very happy. In fact, bees can recognize human faces, and my bees all recognize me. Like the shepherd of the bees. They know my face, they know my smell, I guess, because they have very sensitive sense of smell, and they have antenna that can pick up things very sensitively. So I get on very well with my bees, so they don't try to sting me or try to attack me or anything like that. They know, oh, here comes Ken again, you know, to gather some honey, and he'll leave us some stickies, so we'll get on with the job. And
okay, so you kind of work with it. They don't sit there and just attack you.
No, no, they don't attack. You know, well, no, they might attack somebody else who came to the hives, you know, because they would know that their smell is not the same as mine, or they don't look like me. They can recognize human faces, and they have such a great memory. In fact, science is studying bees for their cognitive abilities. They have a brain the size of a sesame seed, would you believe? And talk about nanotechnology. That is beyond nanotechnology that God has implanted in this little sesame seed of a brain of a bee. The ability to navigate many kilometers from the hive, you know, probably 5 to 6 kilometers from the hive, and to come back, and if they've found a flower or flowers that have got good nectar, they can come back and do a little waggle dance, this figure eight dance they do, and they can communicate exactly how far from the hive, what degree of angle from the hive where these flowers are, and how far those flowers are from the hive. So the other foraging bees can go out and collect the same nectar. It's just amazing. And all that in this little sesame seed brain of a bee. And people tell me that God doesn't exist.
Well, this Moody Science film, you know, did show that. They showed it up close, how a bee actually was doing a dance and telling the other bees how far away it was, which direction to go, into the sun or away from the sun. I mean, it had a number of commands that it passed on to the other bees, who then followed it. And also, they took just enough, when the bees headed off to pick up their supply, they took just enough fuel, just like, you know, effectively, so that they wouldn't be wasting fuel on themselves, take just enough to get to the flowers and come back. So they had to figure that out, because if they didn't run out of fuel, they would just drop like a plane, you know, run out of fuel. So
they wouldn't make it back to the hive.
So that was just
that's absolutely correct. And and bees can carry up to 40%, I think it is, of their body weight. Can you imagine you and me carrying 40% of our body weight a distance of 5 kilometers, and having to use that calculated level of fuel supply that they have, you know, and so you got to take all that into account as well. And but you know, bees do it by flying. They carry 40% of their body weight by flying. And we can't fly, but we probably find it difficult to carry 40% of our body weight a distance of 5 kilometers.
You know, amazing. I mentioned with Life Nets, you know, we had some work that we've done, just very little. We did have one very, very successful operation. It was in Malawi, where we had one of our church leaders in the Blantyre Church, where he had quite a successful operation, and we really helped out the standpoint more of marketing, the way that he sold it, the shop that he set up, and the distribution. But he loved the bees, and he was so proud of what he was doing, and it was just so good to see somebody really enjoy it and kind of working with nature, working with God on something that is so beneficial.
It's a great joy when you can do something like that, and that would have been very helpful because, well, just like the bees, once you've actually taught a man how to fish, in this case taught a man how to be a beekeeper, he can teach others to do beekeeping, and they can build quite a profitable business out of that and help sustain other people's lives. So it's the principle of the bee, isn't it? Or I think it's in the Bible, the principle of the ant. You know, go to the ant, you sluggard, and consider her ways.
Now, do you work with other beekeepers? And tell us about this certification. What does that mean, being a certified beekeeper?
Yes, well, I have a fellowship of beekeepers. I am on Facebook in the Fellowship of Beekeepers, and we share notes, of course, and there are people that come to buy my beehives because they're highly sought after, because we live in a relatively pollution-free part of the world and a relatively disease-free part of the world for bees. Now, poor bees, of course, they suffer many horrible diseases, or they can. You know, American foul brood, there's African beetle, there's the common beetle, beetles, and there's the wax moth, and there's even varroa mite. Oh, there's a list of horrible parasites and things. Even ants can destroy a beehive. And I've developed my own invention of special stands which have little cups of oil on them. And so the ants can't get up past the cups of sump oil that I put in these cups. So ants, I've had a beehive destroyed overnight by ants, just thousands and thousands of ants just killed a beehive. So that's what caused me to develop the invention of my anti-ant proof beehive stand. Yes, but there's so many things like that that can affect bees. So that's why people need to be registered as a beekeeper, so that we don't have disease spreading, and that the bees are looked after in a very humane way. We don't want any inhumane beekeepers dealing with bees. We want people who are professional and caring and loving of their bees. So, yes, it's very important. There are lots of rules for beekeepers to ensure that the bees are maintained in a humane way and that they're free of disease and they're looked after so that they're kept healthy and strong.
How long have you been doing this, Ken?
Oh, I guess I've been doing it, I think, for about 7 years, I think, now. Yes. Yes. And I feel I've only just scratched the surface. I feel that you're talking to me, and I'm not an expert. I really feel very inadequate when I think about this. And I was praying to God this morning and saying, you know, we're going to be talking about bees, and I feel that you'll be sitting back and having a chuckle when Vic and I are talking, because, you know, God knows everything about them, all their cellular structure and all the nanotechnology that's gone into a bee and the amazing things. You know, the common bee, the worker bee, has longer wings, bigger wings than a male bee, you know. And you ask why? Well, of course, they've got to travel long distances and carry big loads, and they need their wings to keep the temperature of the hive around about 34 degrees centigrade, about 95 degrees Fahrenheit thereabouts. They use their wings in so many different ways. They use it to fan the honey in the cone so that, you know, as I mentioned before, it's only about 20% moisture level. And that's why we have honey at quality level by bees. There's just so many fascinating things. I just feel very inadequate as a beekeeper to be here with you because there are others who are much more knowledgeable than me on this subject.
You know, Ken, one thing that I find about life, and it should make us humble, at least I hope it should make us humble, is that the older we get, the more we realize that we just don't know enough about nature. And the more we have instruments that are able to measure things, we think that we can figure it out and we can break down to an atom and even less. And then we find out there's more. The more we probe, the more there is. And the same goes for trying to understand God himself and his nature. For us to say that we know fully what God is just like you saying that you know everything about bees. There are so many dimensions. There is so much deeper knowledge. There is so much science that God has out there for us to explore. That's in one sense exciting, it's humbling, and it really makes me think there's got to be more purpose to life than just to kind of see it and just die. But it has something to do with the continuation of our consciousness, our life, our future. And to me, that gives me a sense of wonderment and joy, knowing that there's something just a whole lot more. And by seeing certain types of creations, like this one of the bees, is one that really stimulates that and reinforces that.
Yes. Well, we talked about Voltaire before, who is recognized and respected as a great philosopher and one who pondered about the deeper things in life. And it was Voltaire that said, "I cannot dream that this watch exists and has no watchmaker."
Mm-hmm.
So Voltaire realized from his studies, even in nature, as we call it, I prefer to call it like the creation, because that's the one who made it, our great creator, and who sustains it, as you say. But a watch is really nothing compared to the complexity of a bee.
Mm-hmm.
But yet we wouldn't say that a watch we picked up off the ground, you know, evolved. That would be ridiculous, you know, because there are so much complexities even in a human design watch. But a bee, wow, you know, as I mentioned, just even the little tiny sesame seed size brain of a bee is a lifetime study in itself, the nanotechnology in that and complexity. And there's something else that science doesn't understand about animals, and that is God has put a level of spirit in them called instinct.
Mm-hmm.
It's not this kind of spirit that we have as human beings, which Paul referred to as the spirit in man, which gives us our intellectual capacity to be able to reason and to have imagination and creativity and to have perception and to have willpower and intuition and memory, those six major aspects of our human capacity and mind. Bees and animals have something a little different. They have an instinct which is set in them by God. They have a level of intelligence and abilities, and because they have a limited life, unlike ourselves, where God has given us the opportunity and the invitation to understand about God and to come to love God and to come to love his way of life and to love the wonderful plan he has for us to ultimately, in a future resurrection, not when we die, but in a future resurrection, of being able to actually be in his family for eternity. And so we see, when we look around the wonderful creation that God has made, this incredible plan of God, and how little creatures have a certain spirit in them of instinct which goes far and away beyond the physical things of which they're composed of. And that's something that I marvel with when I look at, you know, creatures like bees.
In our show notes, in the notes with this podcast, I'll include a few references that Ken gave me, including an article from Beyond Today magazine and a few other links of interest that would connect with this. So you can check the show notes and see what else we have. So Ken, is there anything else that you would like to say?
Well, just the fact that there is such an irreducible complexity and design about bees. They all work in a complete unit, a family unit. You cannot take any one of those units away, and for the bee society to function, you'll never have honey from just one type of bee going out there and collecting the nectar. You know, it takes the whole thing, the whole community of the bees, the queen, the workers, the drones, all the component parts and all the different functions and the workings of that hive, and just the way that it's all put together, and even the architecture and the design and the building of the various wax cones, the beeswax and the propolis and all the other things. you can't take any one of those factors away and have it work. There is just such an irreducible complexity and design in the way that God has made things.
And the way that it seems to be just doing it by itself. But that instinct,
yes.
You know,
yes.
is they don't go to school to get trained. You know, they don't have apprenticeship. They've got to do it right now in the 20 to 40
yes.
days that they live.
Yes.
Well, I think that we'll just say goodbye to our audience. I have really, really appreciated the insight that you have been able to share with us. Thank you so much, Ken, for being on this podcast.
Well, Victor, as always, I just love being with you, my brother. It's always a great pleasure to spend time with you. I can't get enough of you.
Well, ditto.
In that sense.
Ditto back to you. I already feel the same way, too. I just feel very energized when I talk to you.
It's a wonderful pleasure we have together in a brotherly way, and I look forward to future podcasts with you.
Well, I asked Ken what types of things he'd like to talk about, and you know, within 24 hours, here comes 8 ideas from Ken. And I thought let's kind of break it in easy with bees, and yet it's a complex one. So, but there are some subjects that I really would like to discuss with you as we continue our podcast. So thank you very much for joining us. And thank you, audience, for listening to us today.
Thank you, listeners, and thank you, Victor.
Thank you for listening to us today on The Cubic Report. We welcome you to share this podcast and tell your friends about it. We can be found on a variety of platforms, including Apple and Google Podcasts, Pandora, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Audible, and many other platforms. You can easily find us at any browser address box by typing in the words, The Cubic Report, and there we are. Remember, Cubic is spelled K-U-B-I-K. We'd love to hear from you. Write to us at vcubic@gmail.com. That's vkubik@gmail.com. Again, thank you for listening. Come back soon for more.